Hello friends, I'm your host Chris Thrall. I'm a former Royal Marines Commando. I've adventured, for better and sometimes worse, across 80 countries on all 7 continents. Welcome to the Bought the T-Shirt podcast. Rachel, how are you? I just gone straight into this by mistake, which is fine. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you, Chris. How are you?
Yes, I'm wonderful. And for our friends at home, Rachel is going to be talking to me about her challenging of Colchester Town Council. Colchester, it's a garrison town, is it not?
It is, but they'll get very cross with you calling them a town because last year they've decided they're a city.
Oh, well, there you go. Look, does that mean they've had to build a cathedral, or am I a bit outdated with my cityness?
I've not seen the cathedral yet. It might be lurking somewhere, but as yet, no.
Will it be
Large Water Tower counts?
Yes. Will it be an environmental cathedral, I wonder?
Oh, I'm sure it will be, yes.
So,
without recycled egg boxes.
Rachel, I'll tell you what I'm going to do with your permission. I'm going to play your video just to give our friends at home an idea of who you are and the incredible challenge that you've made on the council in the area of climate change, sustainable energy, renewables and this kind of thing. So let's take a look, folks.
So last night, the full council at Colchester met to pass a motion on the climate emergency that they have declared to push the government to do more. So a few of us decided to go along and just give them our opinion on their climate emergency motion. Now, we did make rather a fatal error, but I'll tell you about that after the second speaker.
Good evening. I've been evangelical about renewable energy for over 25 years. That was until the day I actually bothered to research it properly. To my horror, I found that the so-called green initiatives aren't remotely green. They are environmentally disastrous and arguably far worse than anything we are currently doing. But what has shocked me more than the ugly truth about green technology is the attitude of this council when concerns have been raised over the highly polluting products, their inability to be recycled, and the child slave labour involved, not to mention the risk to the public from EVs exploding. Most solar panels are made in China, often with forced labour. The extreme temperatures to make the panels come from burning coal. In the US alone, over 50 million panels a year are installed, generating 1 million metric tons of hazardous waste, which isn't cost-effective to recycle. Wind turbines last around 20 years and consume a colossal amount of resources and energy to manufacture, not to mention the blight and the bird kill. Diesel engines start them up and then gallons of oil lubricate them, and they can't be readily recycled either. I've already informed the Environment and Sustainability Panel that lithium batteries for solar storage and EVs are environmentally horrific. Every year, a single lithium mine causes millions of tons of permanent waste laced with sulfuric acid and radioactive uranium, polluting the water supply for 300 years. Not to mention the unacceptable human costs of child labour to mine cobalt. The children directly handle toxic cobalt, with many crushed to death in collapsing mine shafts. 3 months after this was first pointed out, the council added 100 e-bikes. And more recently, an order has been placed for electric road sweepers. And now you want to vote for more forced labour solar panels and lithium batteries. So is the anti-slavery policy on the council's website there for just decoration? Because you clearly don't abide by it. These are not just teething problems of new technology. They are fundamental flaws, serious ones which cannot be ignored by anyone who genuinely cares about people and the planet. So,
wow, Rachel, I think my audience have just fallen in love with you on what is not such a lovable subject. And the pictures you flashed up, just it's like the whole world has gone mad. I'm speechless how people can't see the madness here. But then I guess if you only watch the mainstream media narrative,
and you're told that having your electric car makes you a good person, you're not, you know, you're going to be quite blinkered. Am I in the somewhere in the right area?
Yeah, I think so. And that's what's one of the most insidious things about this, that people really are very concerned about the environment and they play on that. They play on people's goodness. And I must admit, I didn't know how bad they were till we started researching them. We knew there was a bit of a fire hazard issue. And it's when we started to look into that, we discovered more and more about the lithium batteries. And one of the councillors had mentioned cobalt. So we researched that. And it's just awful. And the more you research it, the worse it gets. And then once that first video had gone out, then there was messages about, you do realise that it's not just lithium batteries that are bad. It's the solar panels. Now, I've got solar, not much, but it was like, oh, no, not the panel as well. It was bad enough. I just got over how awful the battery is. And then it's solar, and then you research wind. And before you know it, everything is not as they've said. It's all pretty awful, which is just devastating for anyone that's bought into it. And most people, are honest, decent and true, and as a result are trusting. So they don't lie to people on this scale. So you don't expect other people. It's very easy to be quite naive. It's only once you start digging through all this stuff that you realise, oh, pretty much everything's a lie. But for most people, I don't think they realise just how bad a lot of these things are and the depth of the lies.
And could you just expand, Rachel, for us on the dangers? I mean, off the top of my head, I've been made aware over the damage or the death to bird life from the wind turbines. I did a piece the other day on the lithium mine, the way that they mine lithium, and these huge slurry pools, for want of a better word, that just toxify the landscape. It's got to be for, you know, not just our lifetime, but probably several lifetimes after. Then there's the child labour, and then also, obviously a lot more. But over to you, Rich. Could you, you know, explain some of your findings?
Well, yeah, I mean, any form of mining is not great for the environment. So, you know, when it comes to lithium, I knew there'd be a dirty big hole in the ground and it wouldn't be good. But I hadn't realised about sulfuric acid. As you say, those big slurry pits full of the sulfuric acid to get the lithium out. And that gets into the surrounding water supply and it contaminates it for up to 300 years. So, and unfortunately, a lot of these mines, all the easy stuff we've already mined. So we're now onto a lot of the mines, not just for lithium, but for everything, are on Indigenous people's land. So they've been moved off all the good farmland. They've got the really crappy land, but it just happens to have minerals. And now they're being pushed off of that as well. So yes, there's that aspect to it. Now there are cleaner ways to do it, but some of the biggest mines do use the sulfuric acid method. Then yes, you do have the child slave labour. Now, a lot of batteries are developing so that they don't need the cobalt, but the cobalt is one of the main things that stops them catching on fire. So whatever they replace that with has to do a good job with the fire. And there's a lot of people argue that, you know, they do use cobalt for sort of oil purification, and yes they do, but the main difference is the amount of cobalt that goes into the batteries that do use them is a substantial amount, whereas with oil refinery you can reuse the amount, so you use about 98.8% you retain with every flush through of oil. So it takes a long time to get through a kilo of cobalt. So that's the difference. I mean, none of the child labour is good and you can't avoid it. No matter what you buy that's got cobalt in it, it will have child labour because 70% of it comes from the Congo and it gets mixed in the factories with the 30% that isn't. So whether we like it or not, all our devices have used it. So, you know, people like to have occur at me on YouTube because I dared to read my speech from a computer. Well, I'm not going to pretend I don't have a computer or a mobile phone. We all do. The thing is, the amount that's going in these car batteries is colossal compared to what's in the phone and the computer. And not that I'm saying I'm okay with the phone and computer. I'm not. Many of us in Colchester, now we've done this research, have vowed that we're not buying any new gadgets. So if anything breaks, I will be buying secondhand so that no new cobalt is coming out on my behalf. Now, I know that's going to make zero difference to the industry, but if everybody does that, the tech industry and the car industry, they're lucrative industries. They've got more than enough money to go and sort that out. And you cannot tell me you can get a blimmin' great lorry to go and collect that cobalt and you can't supply them with a mini digger or a JCB to go and do that digging. There's no reason it has to be small children.
Yes, I wouldn't be feeling too guilty about the technology, although I do completely get people putting pressure on you. That's the nature of putting yourself out there. Because I've thought about it a lot, Rachel. Yeah, I'd like nothing more than to just take all the apps off my phone, because they're intrusive, they're incredibly damaging to the brain. I mean, they're designed to reprogram the levels of frequency that your brain operates at, so that everything else in life becomes mundane and boring. And we live for these, you know, constant sort of dopamine hits. But the reason I'm saying we shouldn't feel too bad about it is society's been shunted, you know, it's been shunted the way of technology, hasn't it? Take the workplace. No longer can let's just use the example of a young man, follow his father into the steelworks or the shipping works or whatever the case maybe they're put in a call center or some kind of, you know, some kind of service work. And it's the way the world's gone. What is there any going back? I mean, I have this theory that it all started going wrong when we started to take the ore out of the rocks, i.e. stuff you can't put back in. So technically it's not renewable. I mean, yes, you can renew it several times, but in that process, you're going to lose part of your, you know, your steel is going to be trashed and rusted away, etc., etc. Do we have any answers in this area, Rachel, or have I sort of gone too far ahead?
I think there are solutions, but at the moment these are very lucrative and they're being pushed. So my argument is they're not going to invest in the better solutions when they can make a load of money out of this. So the types of the technologies that are out there, I would imagine most of us have not seen them. And also when you go back in time to like the original Tesla, not that ridiculous car, but the original Tesla, he was able to suck electricity out of the atmosphere because as you probably know, Chris, every meter you go up, there's more and more electricity. And he developed the Warden Tower and wanted to give free electricity to everybody. So you can't tell me that somebody somewhere couldn't do that now and that those patents aren't out there. So all of the things that we rely on, and yes, I don't think we're going to get rid of technology anytime soon. As much as I would love to throw that mobile phone in the bin, unfortunately I can't, because we wouldn't be able to do things like this. So there is a good side to technology and I'm sure we could do it better, but also there is that throwaway culture. Like, had I not lost my last phone on the beach, this one would be about 7 years old. You know, you don't need a new phone every 5 minutes. So there's things we can do. I mean, my laptop's 12 years old. I'm still probably the tail end of that generation that if it isn't broken, you don't throw it away. Mm. And even when it is broken, you fix it. And, you know, yes, I could get a faster laptop, but when I'm rendering videos, I go and make a cup of tea. I don't need the latest, fastest computer. So I'm of that generation, as I say, probably the last of my kind, but that's how I was brought up. So we could build things to last. And the generation that's coming up now could get used to the fact that, yeah, you know, you don't need a new phone every 5 minutes. So if we just use a bit more wisdom in our purchases and this world needs to change at the moment, and we're all aware of that. At the moment, profit and politics come before people and planet. If we just reversed that and switched it round, we could do all these things. Corporations need to go. I don't know if you've come across Michael Tellinger, one small town idea, but because if you think about it, all the raw materials we could ever need are here in the earth for free. We've got the labour force, that's us. Why are we going via a corporation? If everybody worked together to help one another, and you know, the people that like growing food grow food, the people that like making clothes make clothes, they don't need to be in some sweat factory somewhere, then we can all look after each other. But we're not doing that. We've got sucked into this corporate world. We just need to all reverse that and say, no, we're not doing that. We're going to sort ourselves out and gradually, bit by bit, move away from the corporate world. And I'm sure if the average person that had the technical abilities really looked at solving problems and everybody crowdfunded that and helped, we would come up with much better solutions than the corporations do, because they're putting profit before people and the planet. So we can do it, but we've got to roll up our sleeves and we've got to do it. We're not going to get the solutions from the very people that caused the pollution and are profiteering from everything.
Yes, and they've also, society's been sort of structured, hasn't it, so that kind of people are reticent about making the morally right decisions. And when I watched your video, apathetic? They look like, oh my God, there's something here. There's this woman saying stuff that we don't understand. We just go along with the narrative. I wish she'd be quiet. Oh my, I didn't join the council for this.
Trouble is with them, they're caught in a system that is very well set up. It's a system of control. And to get funding, they have to do certain things. All the councils are in masses of debt. The money they get from the general public isn't that much, because the government and bigger councils pinch it. So like Colchester Council, for example, they only get 11 pence per pound. They're in debt up to their eyeballs. So, you know, we're not their first master, even though we should be. So I sort of see it from their point of view. The last thing they want is someone coming along and throwing a spanner in the works, albeit a righteous spanner, because they just want to get their head down and do what they've been told to do. So I do see why they react in that way, and I'm giving them more problems and more of a headache than they've already got. But unless we all start doing something and make it as socially unacceptable to them as they try to do to us over certain behaviours, we're going to continue down this path. So as uncomfortable as it is for everybody to go through all this, we do need to push ahead and push for the right things, because if we don't, they will carry on. And these green tech, they are so destructive, many of them, to the environment. They're far worse than what we're doing. And, you know, I'm not saying oil is the key and the way forward. I also know that that is polluting. Again, that's a comment I often get. Oh, you're pro-oil. It's like, no, I'm just not wanting to do things that are worse than what we're doing now, that are going to cause more problems further down the line because you can't recycle them. So we just need to use more intelligence. And the councils, you can see why they don't want to be involved in this, because it's such a big problem that they're not really equipped to be dealing with.
And it's also giving people the false impression that something's being done about the energy crisis or the pollution on the planet, when in actual fact, no, it's just, yeah, we've stopped watching the right hand, now we're watching the left hand, or that is my right hand. But yeah, it's just black magic, isn't it? It's right, let's just change the goalposts here a bit and put people under the impression that everything's been taken care of. But
it's so lucrative for them. I mean, I think I watched a video the other day that said something along the lines of, if the whole of America went over to renewables, it was going to cost something like $292 trillion. So that was $1.1 million per adult in the US. Mm. That's just a ridiculous amount of money. Not that it's physically possible, because there aren't enough resources to do all this. So it's just complete pie in the sky from start to finish. So yeah, it's complete craziness. But there's a lot of money in this. So I think they will, left to their own devices, they are going to push this for all it's worth till we've used up every single last resource. And also, part of me thinks, what happens if lithium is the answer, or one of these precious metals, for something that you could build it once and it lasts forever and it does incredible amounts of energy, and we've gone and used it all in some ridiculous car that's gone and caught fire that they couldn't put out and just polluted the atmosphere worse than anything. We shouldn't be taking every last resource for future generations. So the whole thing is just insane.
How did you, what sparked you, Rachel, to do the research that you've obviously done and take action?
Yeah, it was going to that very first meeting. I only went along to watch and ended up accidentally speaking at the first one, made such a hash of it that I thought I'm going to have to go back and do a proper job on this. And that's when I put in the research to find out more, because I thought, well, if I'm going to go in and do this properly, let's find out everything. And that's when I started to dig more, and to my horror, discovered that it was a million times worse than just catching fire.
And the reaction, or how did the council react to the fact that their own policy is kind of contradicted by the direction that they're going?
They are backpedaling a little bit now. At the last full council meeting, they backpedaled from "this is going to save the environment" and changed it to, "oh, we never said this was good for the environment. It's better than what we're doing now." So we've got another council meeting coming up in a couple of weeks' time, and we'll be challenging them on that. So, you know, they're prepared to trash the environment, pollute it for 300 years, all the drinking water, and do some child slave labour just because it's going to save a bit of CO2 in the long run. And then so we'll be doing a little bit of a comparison just to see if that really is a good idea or not, which obviously it isn't. So that will be the next one we'll run at.
What was the motion being voted on in, or have I got that wrong?
It was to renew the climate change emergency and put more pressure on the government to do more daft things. What was interesting this time is when it was voted for in 2019, it was unanimous with 51 councillors all voting for it. This time, 17 voted against it. And they cited a lot of the reasons that we'd put towards them about the fact that these renewables, the recycling of them, the making of them, isn't good for the environment, and the council wasn't taking into that into account. So that's what they cited as their reason to say no. So some progress.
Yes, it's crazier. We've got these electric bikes cropping up in my city, and it's just one of those things, Rachel, that I'm sure to someone it seemed really good on paper. I'm sure they thought they were saving the planet. But the notion that in my city those things are in any way going to be looked, they're all going to end up in the nearest river. That's not taken away from the fact that for probably 18 hours a day, if not more, they're just sat there rusting away. I'm sorry.
And they're littered. We have them too. They're littered all over the streets. We've got people that whenever they're out and they see one, because we've got the scooters and the bikes, they photograph them. So at some point I'll do a little montage of all the places these things have been left. And then hilariously, you see the diesel truck coming round to collect them all.
Yes. Yes. It also makes me smile the way that our pubs and our bars, well, the few that are left, but they all tend to be in the sort of exclusive area of town now, not putting the deafenol on the traditional English pub, but they've all tried to adopt this Mediterranean sort of way of being by having outside areas. And then as soon as the temperature changes, which, let's be honest, in England, it's pretty cold, even in the summer. And they put these big patio heaters on. And no one can see the ludicrous. You know, what are we doing as a species? We're burning off the oil of, you know, I call it the shock absorbers of the planet, so that people can pretend that we live in a different country to the one that we do. Yes, craziness. Can you tell us a bit about your YouTube channel, Rachel?
Yes, 2 weeks ago, we set up one dedicated to watching the council. It's called Colchester Council Watch. And what we're doing is, because the last 9 months, we have sat through hour upon hour of their meetings, trying to glean information and understand how the council worked, because before all this, none of us had the first clue, because, you know, we weren't interested in politics, we're still not, to be honest, but we had no idea. So we've watched all of their meetings to try and understand how the council functions. And over that time, we've kind of got to know the councillors quite well through these videos. And you think, actually, some of them are doing a really good job, others not so much. And a lot of times when you vote, you tend to, or certainly I have, I've voted for someone and hope for the best, or I've done a protest vote for somebody else and haven't a clue about either of them, because you go on the websites and there's not really interviews, or you've just got a picture and a bit of blurb. So it's more hope for the best. And we were thinking, people really should get to know who it is they voted for. So now we're watching these videos anyway. So now the people that are watching them are doing copious notes with timestamps. They give them to me and other people. And we come and do like the cricket highlights, because you don't want to sit through a 4-hour meeting. So we give them the highlights. And I occasionally give a bit of narration as well when I'm feeling cheeky. And go so people in the area can see who they voted for, what their opinions really are, and what they're doing. I've got a great one coming out this evening, actually, on the licensing or extortion committee, as my pet name for them. People need to see which ones are trying to help small businesses and which ones are trying to shaft them. And I think people will be quite surprised when they see which ones are supportive and which aren't, because it's not what you'd think. What I do with these videos is I never say which political party that person is from. I just want people to get to know the councillor, because who cares what political party they're from? Are they any good at their job or not? Do they care? Do they serve the people? So we're hoping that we can really build the audience and people all over Colchester really get to know their council. And we're also hoping that they see how it's run and take one look at it and go, I'm not having this, I'm going to become a councillor, and get more interest, because only 31% of Colchester bothered to vote. And I can see why, because they don't, you know, the council don't do as you ask. So if nearly 70% just were so fed up with them that they couldn't be bothered, if we can get more of those people interested in what's going on, and we've got some real characters in the council. I mean, some of their videos are just hilarious. They are the gift that keeps on giving with some of these videos. So we're able to put the clips together, and sometimes they'll mention what we're doing in the videos. So we did one recently, a councillor thought some of our filming was unfair. So I did a video response to that and explained the background, and actually gave our council some rules to follow. If you don't want to be in a video, you know, don't do this, this and this, and then you'll be fine. So, you know, we do have some fun with it as well. It's not all just dry and boring stuff, but we want people all over the country should be doing a council watch, so that they're really shining the spotlight on what those councillors do. And that is how you'll bring about change, because you go in and have your say, you've got 3 whole minutes, they listen, sort of, and then they just ignore you when you've gone and carry on as before. But if they are getting, every time they go out in the street, someone says, I saw you in the video, what you did, thank you so much, or the opposite extreme, that will bring the behavioural change that they like to make in the public, that will bring about to them. And they will really get to know public opinion, because most people have not got a clue what is going on in their local council.
Yes, when you were, when you were saying that, I was getting visions of Carry On Council.
Where's I'd have thought of that name. I could have used that.
Yes, I could just imagine Sid James now. Yeah, just tell the public what they want. But
well, the thing is, they forget the cameras are on them, and in these meetings like this one that's coming out this evening, they're just talking away about no, we can get some more money out of them. And it's like, you do realise there's a camera right behind you, don't you? Oh well, okay, let's get that out tonight.
Are you in touch at all? Because somebody challenged, was it Glastonbury Town Council?
Yes, Sandy Adams, yes.
Sandy, yeah, that was... Can you remind me what she challenged them on? Was it the health policy?
Well, she did a net zero debate, and actually Karina and I, she's one of the other speakers from Colchester, we actually went to that debate, met Sandy and all the people that she had as speakers, and we've actually asked Colchester to do the same here. Now, in Glastonbury, the mayor was the only person they could get to stand up in favour and speak on in favour of net zero. XR were there, but they wouldn't come forward with any speakers, so they couldn't actually have a proper debate. It ended up being like very one-sided. But the leader of the Colchester Council has agreed in principle to a debate. Now, obviously, we've got to finesse all the details. But yes, we're hoping to do the same thing here. But this time, we really do hope either the Green Party or XR will bring someone along with evidence, not flawed computer models, and we can have a proper debate on net zero and the policies. Because what we're finding is, and we've written to the council and we've gone in, we asked them, have you looked at all the information regarding the climate? And because they brought it upon themselves to declare a climate emergency, and we said, well, what data did you look at? Why have you declared this? Because the IPCC haven't declared it themselves, neither have the UK government. They've passed a motion to declare it, but they haven't. So why, as you as a local council, think we have an emergency? Just down the road, the other council hasn't. So do we all move there where there isn't an emergency? Anyway, they couldn't give us anything other than the IPCC said type of stuff. So we then said, well, have you looked at any dissenting information? And the answer came back as, no, I don't think so. Now, they have said on record, on public record, that they will look at all the available information, and they haven't. And I've been going backwards and forwards with their climate emergency officers, who haven't been overly open, let's say, to looking at all of the information. So therefore, we do need this public debate, because if we cannot get it through to the officers, who are the ones that steer and guide the councillors in every decision they make, if they're not giving them the full picture, how on earth can those councillors make informed, evidence-based decisions when they haven't had all the information and evidence? So that is why we want all of those councillors there at a meeting, listening to experts that have worked at the UN, have had peer-reviewed climate published data and papers. They need to be listening to them and be able to ask some questions directly. So that's what we're pushing for, to bypass these officers who are very biased, even though it's in their code of conduct not to be.
Yes, my worry there, Rach, was the UN scientists would be would be even more biased.
No, he's not. He left the UN because he could see. He was an advisor there for 10 years, and then when he, on something else, but when he turned his attention to climate, and he's written a book on it, actually, Peter Taylor. So, yeah, he's fully aware of what's going on, and he disagrees with how the data has been manipulated, very much so. They wouldn't employ him now, put it that way, he's been cast out, but he has those credentials. That's so much better than me reading stuff and then regurgitating it to the council. I'm not a climate expert. If I bring in someone that is, who's irrefutable, then that's going to get through so much better than our little 3-minute spiels that we do every 2 months.
Rachel, I'm just looking, sorry, when I'm looking across, I'm not being rude, I've got the live chat up here, and there's some wonderful comments coming in. This woman is spot on, and many, many, many similar comments. You don't have to comment on this if it's not, you know, not your sort of area of knowledge, but someone's asking about what's going on with the skies. Is that anything you have a...
I haven't delved into that purely, but, well, I have for my own personal stuff, purely because I don't think Colchester Council are ready for us to start talking about geoengineering. So baby steps. You've got to meet them where they're at and hold them by the hand and gradually bit by bit. It's on our list, but it might take us a while to get there. We've got to tackle CO2 first and then maybe move on to the other stuff.
Yes, no, very, very, yeah, probably very wise. It gets confusing, Rachel, because I chatted to Dane Wigington fairly recently, and a super, super chap, probably, I think it's fair to say, the world's leading knowledge on, you know, on geoengineering. And this is where it gets confusing, because he said the reason we're seeing what's going on in the skies is because the corporate mentalists have damaged the planet so much. He quoted something crazy, and don't quote me on this, but it was, you know, 80 billion barrels of oil is being used per day, or I've probably got that completely wrong, but he quoted this statistic that made me go, whoa. And he reckons the reason we're seeing the blocking out of the sun is because, well, in order to keep the climate down, because they've done so much damage. And I'm not trying to be, you know, objectionable here or anything. I was just, that's kind of confused things. So
I have no idea. I've not gone into it in that depth. I prefer to focus on things I think I can affect. And it's starting off small and getting bigger. So I must admit, I don't study it too much because, one, I don't want to be that depressed. And two, I can't really do much about it at this moment in time. So I've left it well alone, along with a lot of other subjects.
Yes, no, it's very wise, Rachel, isn't it? You know, we have to have the influence that we can, that's at our disposal, and that also keeps our spirit up, literally, because
it takes you away. It's another distraction, and there's so many that I try. Yeah, it's not cuddle time. I try and stay really focused.
Rachel, thank you so much for coming on the show. Honestly, you're doing fantastic work. Do you advise are you in a position to advise people that might want to challenge their council or set up a council watch themselves?
What we're doing on the channel is I've got playlists, and there's one that is dedicated to show people how to talk to their council, how to edit videos. And also I've created a Dropbox resource folder where all our speeches, all our research, all of the freedom of information requests, all the emails backwards and forwards on climate change and other stuff, which reads like War and Peace, all of that is at their disposal. So yes, people must get along and do this themselves. And all those resources are available on Colchester Council Watch YouTube channel. And we've got a backup on Odyssey as well.
You're brave and you're organised. Rachel, just stay on the line so I can thank you properly. But friends at home, thank you to everyone who's joined in the live chat. I hope you've got as much out of this as I have. If I could please ask you to like and subscribe, as always, check that you're still subscribed, because we get a lot of people unsubscribe from us. If you can support the channel, folks, please do so on Locals, Patreon, or just become a YouTube member for $1.99. And that just leaves me to say thank you for tuning in. Look after yourselves. Much love.
Friends, thank you for listening to the Bought the T-Shirt podcast. Please like, subscribe and share. And don't forget to follow me on social media. Username, Chris Thrall. Instagram, Chris.Thrall. Thank you.